Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barrichini, and Alex Hobson.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Sticks in the Six, episode 123, brought to you by the fine folks at Indie Ale House. Looks like we're all back into our regular places, or somewhat regular places. So I'm back here in Ontario. But before we get to all the great hockey talk and the Maple Leafs talk, let's check in with you boys. Alex, how are you doing this week, buddy?
Something happened this week.
I guess, yeah.
Something happened.
I don't know what, but.
Is there something worth talking about today?
Hey, yeah, it was a little stickier for some of us, wasn't it?
Okay, so I'm just gonna stop beating around the bush. The Leafs won a series. Let's get that out of the way right away.
Let's go.
Lame round of applause, but that's okay. They heard much better from Maple Leaf Square. So before that series started, I sent out a tweet along the lines of, if the Leafs win around this year, I will let people tie me to a chair and dump and pour and splash whatever liquids they wanted on me, just, and whatever food, whatever the hell, just, you know, shower me in shit, basically. And so for those that don't know, I work in a radio station, and the station that I work for in the building is right next to the rock radio station. 97.7 Hits FM. Great station. If you're ever in the Niagara area, yes. The morning show there, Soper and Brown, I'm biased, but I think one of the funniest morning shows in the province, if you're still an FM radio listener. So I poked my head in next door the one day, and I was like, listen, I figured that something in along the lines of what I tweeted is like right up their alley. So I was like, you guys want to help me out with this? And Soper was like 1,000%. So Monday they put the Leafs obviously won their series on Saturday. Monday they put the word out on the air. And they basically invited listeners to come down, and we had a whole bunch of like old expired food and stuff that was sitting in the kitchen and in promotions and in our promotions closet and stuff. And if you want to see the video, I tweeted it at A Hobson Media, or you can check it out on the 97.7 Hits FM Facebook page. It was probably the most disgusting 30 minutes of my life, but every second of it was worth it because I got to see my favorite team play a game in the second round that night. So, I put my body on the line. I don't regret it.
I got to ask you, like, what that six-year-old Clamato or whatever it was, six-month-old Clamato, like, what was that like going down?
Was that a month or I thought it was years.
No,
it
might have been years. Seven-year-old Clamato.
Oh, God, that's
and
worse.
I want to make this very clear. I did not drink any of the Clamato. I actually went to great lengths to keep my mouth shut.
He didn't seem to give it a little lick on the lips afterwards.
Well, I couldn't help it. I mean, it was showering all over my face, so like little bits of it ended up in my mouth, but I wasn't. I tried my hardest because I had to open my mouth to breathe too, right?
Be sour and rotten as hell.
Yeah,
though.
It was not good.
There's full chunks of celery back in it.
Oh God,
no chunks of anything, thankfully. But I got to tell you, boys, after I, it started off with the honey and the syrup, right? And then it started off the honey and the syrup. And then right after that came the 7-year-old Clamato. And literally as that jug started getting emptied on my head, I lost all sense of where I was and what was happening. Like I was a shell of a man from the moment that Clamato hit my head.
And oh God.
It was fully worth it. But I'll tell you know what the worst part was? We had a window that was like 9:30 until 10 o'clock in the morning when we were filming this and people could come by and do this. And around 9:40, the guys had to go back on the air. So for about 10 minutes, I was just sitting out there on that porch. It's like 6 degrees outside and not, and there's wind. coming around. I'm sitting in shorts and a t-shirt, and I'm sitting there soaked in expired Clamato and
syrup and honey,
flour and syrup and honey and all this stuff. And I'm just sitting there shivering in the cold, waiting for them to come back out and finish the job. And I think that part was honestly the worst of everything. I just hate it. It was the most disgusting and the most violated I've ever felt, but it was worth it.
I will say
I love it.
It could have been a lot worse if somebody dumped hot sauce or like sriracha on you, and if it got into your eyes, those glasses did not look like it covered anything.
So the one guy that came by the station that dumped the syrup and the honey on me also had some pool dye, and I'll pour, because the thing is that we had a rule. They laid out ground rules on the air, and the rules were no piss, no shit, no toxic chemicals. So anything outside of that was fair game. So I was thinking, is pool dye not a toxic chemical? And he's like, no, it's not toxic, but it'll probably stain you for 2 weeks. And I'm like, okay, no, we're not doing
that. No, that I draw the limit there.
Hey, forget the green men in Vancouver. We got our own blue men.
Oh man, I missed a chance to go viral there. I could have showed up. I could have showed up at the front of the stage at game one in Maple Leaf Square and just stand up there and say, yeah, you know what? This was intentional. I used pool dye to color my skin this way, and it was all in the name of the passion. So
there you go. Well, Peter, it's safe to say you didn't have anything poured on you this week, but how's your week going, buddy?
No, I did not. But yeah, my week is very quiet. Obviously, the big news, the Maple Leafs are moving on. Obviously, I was like chatting with a bunch of my friends from work, and we're going back and forth. I'm like, yo, this is like hectic. This is nervous. And then all of a sudden, as soon as we saw the goal go in, I yelled at the top of my lungs. I'm pretty sure everyone in my house was asleep, and I'm pretty sure I woke them all up, and everyone turned on the TV. What's going on? I'm like, oh my God, we actually did it. And I'm screaming at the top of my lungs. It was absolutely phenomenal. Obviously, I didn't put any wager or any bet on there, but I will say this, Alex, getting stuff poured on or licking a carpet if you're Jesse Pollock. I don't know. That was kind of...
Well, the thing is Jesse Pollock licking the carpet was more of like a short term, but like it was probably more disgusting in the moment than what I was dealing with.
Yeah.
But it was also over in like 5 seconds. Like he immediately got up.
That's true. Yeah.
I had to, if you guys,
I'd still do what you did over looking a carpet. Not do that.
No, if you guys watched the video at the end, they had this big, one of those big office cooler jugs of water, and they dumped it on me, and I'm sitting there like showering basically under it. And then I had to go into the building. The guy gives me a stack of baby wipes that was like 2 inches thick, and I had to clean myself up in the washroom. And then driving home, which was a half hour drive back to my house from work.
Oh, God.
My body was about as clean as I was going to get it, but my hair was still a disaster. And yeah, it was not a fun shower when I got back, but, it was worth it, in every retrospect, because we're sitting here talking about the Leafs in round two. I don't want to take credit for the Leafs going to round two, but I'm also not going to say I wasn't part of it.
I think it was my T Swizzle, reference last week.
Boy. Yes. Yes.
I was like, I don't want to see this movie again. But no, guys, it's been, obviously you guys talk about your fandom and where you're at. And for somebody like me who's followed the team for as many years as I have, and to see that second round again, for the first time in nearly two decades, I mean, it's nice to get that taste of second round. And obviously we're going to talk about the start of the second round here on this episode as well. But I do want to say, I think all three of us better be working on these playoff beards as we go in here.
Without a doubt.
We got at least four more games. At least four more games. So, general reactions, though, boys, to this first round. I mean, obviously, Vasilevskiy didn't look the same. Peter, you had a great piece about some of the keys to what the Leafs need to do to get that series done. We'll throw it to you first. What's your general takeaway from, the Leafs taking Tampa in six games?
The fact that they didn't show any quit. Obviously they had the game book on Vasilevskiy. Obviously the whole blocker side was very key, but also them getting traffic in front, that played a big factor in, getting the goals past them and everything leading up to that. You get into his zone, you get into his lane, he's going to have trouble, you know, tracking that puck very, I just don't understand. I really don't know where I'm going with this. I'm actually too excited with everything, but the fact that he wasn't quite himself, blocker side, you know, traffic, what have you, seemed like something was not necessarily ailing him, but he just wasn't himself. It seemed like, you know, the regression was starting to happen with him and the whole entire team. But the Maple Leafs quit in every single moment and not showing any panic or fear or whatsoever. The ability to battle back, that is what makes you a playoff team. And yeah, they were out heavily played. I mean, the whole series report on Natural Stat Trick, like, you saw the discrepancy in everything, shot attempts, scoring chances, high danger. It was all heavily favored in Tampa, but Toronto took advantage of those opportunities when they were given to them. And, you know, credit to them for finding a way every single time, especially in those three overtime wins, specifically game six. And, you know, big shout out to Ilya Samsonov for keeping them in when he needed to and making those key saves. Cause if he, looking at back of those saves, if you were to put Frederik Andersen back in there, Jack Campbell, chances are those pucks are going in. And again, we talk about how they didn't get key saves from those guys at key moments. It was just a fact. I mean, like, everyone is joking around, oh, that would have been a Freddie Andersen goal that he let in, or Jack Campbell or whatever. But Samsonov made some highlight reel saves to keep them alive. And the combination of, you know, winning ugly, winning when they needed to, and taking advantage of those chances that have eluded them for so long, with the combination of getting those key saves, that ultimately played a big factor.
I mean, it's maybe the first time we've seen Vasilevskiy look human. And mm-hmm. and that blocker side was unbelievably weak. He just didn't seem to be seeing the puck as well as he has in the past. And, you know, maybe it is injury. Obviously, time will tell. You know, we'll see that come out at some point. But I think, too, it comes into fatigue, right? Like, you had Brian Elliott this season as his backup. I mean, how often did you see Brian Elliott playing games?
Yeah.
You had Vasilevskiy playing the last 3 years into the Stanley Cup Finals. And I think it finally catches up with a guy like that. Like, I mean, two cup wins, a cup final last year. You can't really beg the guy for not having a good series, but it kind of came at the perfect time for the Leafs. And they needed a goaltender to look human for them to kind of pull this one out a little bit, because they were outplayed in a lot of aspects of this series and during a lot of times. And they were lucky to get away with some of these wins, but at the same time, they were resilient, like you said. And Samsonov had a huge part in that. And we talked about that way back in the preseason when we were saying, you know, is it going to be Murray's team or is it going to be Samsonov's team? And I think we were all pretty much in agreement that Murray's going to start the year. We're going to end the year with Samsonov. And, I mean, here we are sitting there talking about a guy that definitely stole a couple opportunities away from Tampa to take that series. So, Alex, your general takeaways of what happened in round one?
Before we get to my general takeaways, I'm going to throw a video up on the screen here. I grabbed doorbell cam footage from the moment the Leafs scored in overtime in game six.
Beautiful.
So here we go. If you're one of the two people watching the stream right now, I hope you enjoy this. Yeah, so that was the feeling inside the Hobson household on after game six there.
Just loud noises right yep. there.
Yeah, I'm glad we didn't get the cops called on us, because it could have sounded like a murder was going on in there, especially considering my brother, the only thing he was doing was screaming my name over and over. I don't know if you guys can hear that. Alex! So... what a great moment. And you know what? I'm not going to lie, boys. I didn't want to say anything out loud after game four, because I've seen this team blow leads and blow opportunities in the most unimaginable ways. That being said, as soon as they made that comeback in game four, I knew they were winning the series.
Mm-hmm.
Because once they proved that they could, on the road, for the second game in a row, come back and beat Tampa Bay in their own building, with the second game being a 3-goal comeback as opposed to just a 1-goal comeback. I mean, that right there is something that never, ever happens to the Leafs. They never pull that kind of a, that kind of thing off. We talked about it last episode. They are always on the other end of those games when that involve big chokes and not being able to hold down a lead and, you know, getting embarrassed in your own barn. That's always the Leafs on the other end of that. So, you know, as much as we talked about the individual things that the Leafs had to do to get out of the first round, like they had to tighten up here and, you know, get good goaltending from Samsonov, the big boys got to show, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing above all that they needed to win that series was the buy-in mentality to not quit and to be able to find ways to win those games, even if they don't deserve it. And when I saw them make that comeback in game four, my thought was, okay, so if you can do that in game four and you've got guys who are going to ensure that there's no quit any night, so you can forget about a 2021 Montreal scenario. You know, you've got guys like Ryan O'Reilly there, Noel Acciari, Luke Shen, Jake McCabe, all these guys that want to make a, like, new guys who, and I'm
they've
not
been there. They've been there.
They've, mm-hmm. Well, McCabe hasn't. He spent a good 500 games without getting a single playoff game. But everybody else, like, they've been there and they know what it takes to get there. So I wasn't worried about the Leafs choking up and just completely fizzling out and dying. That being said, I'm the exact same thing is happening to me that just happened to Peter. I just lost. You know,
you're overcome with joy.
I knew that they weren't going to quit because of how well they were playing and like the amount and that like the type of guys that they had on their team. So my mind just went to, okay, so if you can do it in game four, then why can't you do it in game five, game six, or game seven? And, you know, I'm not going to lie, going into game six, I did have a feeling in my stomach that was like, if the Leafs lose this game, I think they're losing in seven. But deep, deep, deep down, even below that feeling, I was like, I think this is going to be the team that does it. And they went ahead and did it. So, obviously the excitement was running rampant. We've talked a lot on this show about the gap between me and you guys, because you've actually seen success. I haven't. And that was, I got to say, boys, first time in 19 years seeing my team win a playoff series. It was a pretty good feeling. So hoping that there's three more to be won this year.
Yeah. And you know what? It's funny that you, I'm not going to sit here and say that I knew that they were going to take the series. Cause I'll be honest with you, going into game six, I was nervous. I was the same as you, Alex. I thought, you know, if they lose game six, it's done. And we're in the same spot talking about the same thing. Yeah. Yeah. And you could just see the tables turn a little bit, but at the same time, you know, I think back to what Keith said about McCabe in that first round. He seemed shaky going into his first playoff game. Beyond that, he grew as a player. Like he became the Jake McCabe that the Leafs acquired ahead of the deadline, where he played physical. He was more confident. He was poised with the puck. He was making plays that maybe he didn't make in the first couple games. And because of that, and because of guys like O'Reilly who just refused to give up. I mean, we saw him take that high stick late in game one of the second round here. And like this is the guy who's just going to be in those grimy areas no matter what. Acciari, the changes made from Sheldon Keefe to take Justin Hall out of the lineup finally. And to go 11-7 and it worked out for them. And those little moves, I think, I'm not going to say he was outcoached by Cooper most of the series, but I think Tampa had the edge in coaching most of the series. I think Sheldon Keefe made the moves that he had to make ahead of game six to get the job done. And it was a tight, tight game. They found a way to get it done. And at the end of the day, JT throwing a puck on net, and you know what they say, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And that was a cheap goal, but it was a goal, and there's no video on the scorecard. At the end of the day, the Leafs come out with the series win. And I mean, the excitement in Leafs Nation, you guys saw fireworks going off downtown Toronto, people mm-hmm. climbing poles. It's round one. And you know, the new comeback from anybody outside of Leafs Nation is going to be like, you guys won one series. But the fact that they were able to get that series done, and now you've given your core group, the group that had zero playoff success, you've given them experience, you've given them playoff success, you've also given them the knowledge of what needs to get done to get past that hump, you know, and get over the bump in the road. And, I mean, general takeaway, Samsonov played a hell of a series. You know, even sometimes, you know, he was a little shaky in certain games and came back and you know, played well the next time around to get it done. So I think that was huge. Your core four were huge. And, you know, you had the guys in the lineup to fill the holes that, you know, you need to get it done. So
here's what I'm going to say about Samsonov's goaltending in this series. I'm just going to pull up a stat for you here. The 2020 playoff bubble. Frederik Andersen through five games against Columbus had a .936 save percentage. Jack Campbell against Montreal last year had a .934 save percentage. And where did that get them?
Nowhere.
You know why? Because Frederik Andersen allowed that back-breaking goal to Liam Foudy in game two. It was the second goal of game five that ended up icing them. Campbell allowed that horrible first game, what he called the worst goal of his career against Brendan Gallagher in game seven against Montreal. And don't get me wrong, there were reasons beyond that why the Leafs lost both of those series. But what they needed more than anything else was a goalie that was able to make the big saves at the right times. And the goalies that were able to lock it up and settle in when it mattered the most. Like, if you notice Samsonov, a lot of the goals that he allowed came in the first and the second period. Can I give you guys a stat? I can't even pull my thoughts together. Throughout the first series, throughout round one, in the third period and overtime periods of the series, Samsonov stopped, I think it was 49 of 51 shots. You can't even begin to stress how important that is for the Leafs. That game four or whatever it was, sorry, not game four, it was game three, when the Leafs won it at overtime in the last minute of the first overtime period. Samsonov stopped 8 of 8 shots. And, you know, those shots that he stopped included Kucherov's wild chance on the backhand where I thought the game was over. There were tons of other chances in that game where the game easily could have been over. Samsonov could have allowed the goal, and no one really would have blamed him because there was, you know, the Leafs had a couple of bad defensive breakdowns in that game. Like, it was not a great game played for them. But Samsonov tightened up, and he made the saves that the team needed him to make the most when they needed it the most. And that's a big reason why they're in round two right now.
Yeah, I mean, he made the saves in big – and like you said, the opportunities weren't poor opportunities by Tampa either. And, I mean, I think this is – the you can't always go by the numbers. And that's the biggest thing. You can't always go by the numbers. I mean, Vasilevskiy made some great stops, but at the same time – you know, like his numbers weren't incredible either. And like, he had an okay series. He just looked more human than we're used to. I want to jump back to Frederik Andersen for a second though, but where is he? This is a story that is interesting because I forget who brought it up, but if you look at his history going into playoffs, aside from his time with the Leafs, he's kind of gone in injured every year and doesn't play a game. And it's interesting because, you know, Leafs let him walk. Carolina picked him up. And now Carolina's sitting there with their guy not being in net for them in their run. I mean, they're not doing too bad, so we can't really give him hell for it. But it's just an interesting thought going forward for Carolina if that continues to be the case. But I want to jump into round two here real quick, boys. And Leafs down 1-0 in the series against Florida. It was a hard-fought game, 4-2 game. I think it looked, you know, there was – who was it? Joe Haggerty, I think you retweeted Peter. And he was saying, well, the Leafs wanted the Panthers. Now they got the Panthers, and they're doing the exact same thing that they did to the Bruins.
The Bruins fans wanted we won a cup in game one.
Yeah, but my thing is, I think regardless of, you know, Florida's coming off winning a game seven against the best team in the NHL this year, right? Had Boston come into it, Boston would be coming off winning a game seven against a team that, you know, pushed them to the absolute brink, and they would still be fired up. Momentum would be on their side. The Leafs are coming off a celebration of getting past that first round in how many years. I think to judge it and look at it and say, well, it was a 4-2 game. It wasn't close. It was so much closer than you think. Physicality wise, Luke Shen had a big hit. Jake McCabe had a couple of big hits. You know, it was such a playoff hit. Morgan Riley had a huge hit, and it just seemed like so much more playoff intensity in that game. I want to talk to you guys about the game one panics that seem to go over Leafs Nation on a constant, consistent basis. Normally the first round, now we're in the second round, game one, we lose 4-2, all of a sudden panic sets in. Alex, is this like a trending thing in Leafs Nation, or is it just like, hey, every loss, we're going to throw shit against the wall and see if it sticks?
That. We're going to throw shit against the wall.
That. Just that.
That's okay. I'm probably the wrong person to ask about this because I'm not going to lie, boys. I am still riding the high from just getting out of the first round. Even if they lose on Thursday and they go down 2-0 in the series, I won't really care all that much. And obviously you don't want it to get to that point. You want the Leafs to split the games at home and you know, go down to Florida tied 1-1. But you know, it's just they didn't play an awful game, and it's like you just watch these guys pull off three overtime wins all on the road against the Tampa Bay Lightning. You just saw this team, this group of players that never in the past 19 years has a group of players on the Toronto Maple Leafs been able to win a round. This team right here, this group, was able to do what no other team in the past 20 years has. And you're going to get freaked out in game one of round two? Really? No, I'm not getting worried. I think that it's just Leaf fans have a very like knee-jerk reaction type of way of handling games. Like I follow so many people on Twitter and I love them because, you know, I love being a Leafs fan. I love the community and I love how we're all unhinged. But there are people that I follow on Leafs Twitter who, when they lose a game, it will be over. This team does not have what it takes. They have no heart. They don't show up in the right moments. Then when they win the next game, everything's back to normal. We are so back. This team is the best. They're going on a run. I know people like to make fun of Leaf fans for that, but like they really do show it themselves on Twitter after games like that. So yeah, I'm not worried after game one. Nobody should be worried. It's a 7-game series. If you really thought that the Florida Panthers, who just took down the best team in the league coming back from a 3-1 series deficit, are going to just go down like that, then you're wrong, and you have unrealistic expectations.
Those losses that you're talking about, too, are coming in, you know, September preseason.
Oh, yeah.
And Leafs Twitter's melting down.
All throughout the year, man. Like, it's literally every single loss. Like, I actually don't think there was a single loss this year where there wasn't at least somebody like, this team is done. They're screwed.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And before we get to your take on it, Peter, this almost seems like a perfect opportunity to, you know, give our partners a shout out here from India Ale House. The Leafs are back in round two, and so is playoff hockey. It's back with the Maple Leafs, getting ready for a night out of watching the game or watching it at home with the gang. What better way to do it than with a nice cold one from the folks at the India Ale House in Toronto? With two locations in the city at Italy, Toronto, at Bay and Bloor, the Biroteca location, they have two big screens, amazing authentic Italian food, and loads of beer, also at OG Brew Pub in the junction at Keele and Dundas with 120 seats, famous bar food, and 12 taps. Indie Ale House is an award-winning brewery featuring their flagship Instigator IPA and dozens of rotating monthly special release beers. Perfect for takeout, dine-in, or bottle shop online orders when planning for game night. You can find Instigator IPA and Marco Polo Pilsner at finer LCBOs across the province as well. Hashtag LiveIndie is the motto. Adventurous, fun-focused beers with a selection for everyone, from a healthy dose of in-your-face hoppy beers for the beer geeks to mainstream pilsners and easy drinking options, Indie Ale House is the go-to for game day. Visit www.indiealehouse.com to place your orders today. And Peter, are you grabbing a beer for a game two, or what's going on? What are your thoughts going into game two, coming off that game one loss? Are Leafs Nation just in full panic mode, or what's going on?
I will be opening up a beer because I'm going to be chilled. I'm going to be relaxed. I'm going to be calm. I was going to drop an F-bomb right there because I got to start swearing a little bit more, boys. I feel like I'm the like the conscience of the show kind of thing.
You keep us grounded, bud. You keep us grounded.
I'm the glue that keeps us together kind of thing. Yeah, no, I agree with Alex. I think, you know, there are going to be people that blow things out of proportion. And yes, there were, I still think that there were some game one jitters, just like they had against the Tampa Bay Lightning in game one. But I thought this was a better game one performance compared to what we have seen in the past from the Maple Leafs. Yes, there was, you know, Jake McCabe kind of losing his man, or like losing the stick tie up on Nick Cousins on the first goal. There was the traffic in front on Samsonov, and even the deflection off Matthew Nyes's stick going into the goal. The TJ Brody, you know, mishap on that goal, to Carter Verhaeghe, and I'm still kind of a little bit worried about TJ Brody's play at the moment. But they still showed that intensity. They showed that physicality. They got off to a blazing hot start. And yeah, the Florida Panthers forecheck was kind of a bit of an issue, but they still managed to match that intensity. Something that we saw at peaks and valleys. There were moments during the Tampa Bay series, but they came out flying and hitting everything in sight. I mean,
I've honestly never seen the Leafs lay so many massive open ice hits.
Yeah. Exactly. And this is why they brought in Luke Shen, Jake McCabe, and I'm going to say even Morgan Riley. I mean, they didn't bring Morgan Riley in, but man, that open ice hit on Eric Staal was something.
You know, Peter, and they did bring him in the sense that this Morgan Riley was not on the team all year.
Yeah.
This was a late post-deadline trade acquisition. Regular season Morgan Riley for playoff Morgan Riley.
Playing with Leafs fleeced themselves.
At least, like, it seems like one of those deadline moves that they didn't move that's actually benefiting them, because they needed their top puck moving defenseman to play at his best. And he is playing like he should have been during the regular season. Now, whether he was, we know he had an injury, we know he was inconsistent, but he is shooting the puck where he's doing what he needs to do. But yeah, I'm still happy with the fact that they still managed to battle back. I mean, back-to-back goals from Nyes, and I'm just going to say that was an absolute beauty in tight. His reaction from the Maple Leafs Twitter account, that like solo shot of him like down on the ice, the one knee sally, and just seeing the emotion on his face. This is why Matthew Nyes has gained the trust of Sheldon Keefe to be on the top line, score a key goal, and even Michael Bunting. Bunting coming back, kind of having that revenge tour mentality kind of thing, where he kind of played the villain against Tampa Bay with the suspension, missed the game, came back, looked good in game six, and he looked better in game one here. So I think if the Maple Leafs just tighten up a little bit defensively, and I even talked about a key being watching out for their being better on their breakouts and passing in the neutral zone, because Tampa Bay is a quick transitional team. If they're able to do that and still match the intensity and be smart with their puck, smart with the puck movement, there isn't any doubt that they could pull off a W in game two, three, four, reel off three straight in a row, because they have that mentality right now. And Forbes, you mentioned a good point, how no matter who they were going to play, Boston or Florida, there's going to be a team with high momentum coming in. Now it seems like Toronto has the edge. Obviously, Florida has the edge because they're up 1-0. But don't discredit Toronto, because what during an optional skate, what happened? Everybody was on the ice working their tails off, because you know what's at stake right now. They know that they got to be at their best. Everyone was at practice, including the Stars. That's a championship mentality right there.
Well, and you think too, like the feeling that you have after winning round one, I mean, magnify that every time you win a round, right? So you heard the guys talking about, you know, this is, you know, it's a good feeling to get it done for Leafs Nation. It's a good feeling to get it done for the guys in the room. Well, like, magnify that every time you win the next four games, because round two is going to be 10 times better. Round three is going to be incredible. And you know, God help me, they get to the Stanley Cup final and you know, put up some wins there. Like it's going to change the lives of some of those guys in that room. And hell, some of us as well. Like,
oh yeah.
You know, by that point, Alex will fully dye himself blue for the rest of his life. Like,
Jesus.
Yeah. People have already started asking me what my claim is gonna be to get them to round three, and I'm like, keep my mouth shut.
Yeah. But you know what I'm saying? So like and that's the mentality that they have to have, whether it's participating in optional skates or just knowing that, you know, you got guys like Luke Shen, you got guys like O'Reilly, you have guys like, you know, even Johnny Hockey, like, or Johnny Tavares, like, he's going to be, he's nearing the end of his career. To get him an opportunity to play for a cup, I mean, that's what your mentality has to be. But aside from that, like, obviously Leafs down 1-0 in the second round. Peter, I'm going to throw it right back to you. What do they have to do to get game two to go their way?
Again, I kind of mentioned it with one of my takeaways and even the last comment. Be smarter with the puck. I mean, too many times that the Panthers are pressuring in the offensive zone and in the neutral zone that they're just throwing the puck blindly and it's being picked up and, you know, results in a turnover and everyone's scrambling. You can't do that, especially in the second round right now. You know, again, yeah, the Florida Panthers are a wild card team, but they got here for a reason because they executed properly against the Boston Bruins and they used that what made them successful to their advantage in that series in game one. I mean, they were absolute powerhouses. Their top players in Matthew Tkachuk and Brandon Montour were critical factors in that game. You got to be smart because they can hurt you. Just be smarter with the movement. And you know what? Move together as a unit too. Like the breakout passing, they weren't connecting as well, kind of going back to the Tampa Bay series. They got to be aware of their surroundings because it ended up costing them. And I'm just going to say this too. I think we need to see a lot more from TJ Brody. I know I mentioned it a little bit before, but because we saw that goal that Carter Hagee scored, how he was just absolutely completely – he's focusing in on the puck, and he doesn't take the man. And usually, knowing Brody, he's always taking the man. He's not making those pinches towards the puck or trying to, like, keep the play alive kind of thing. He's smart about it, but at that moment, he did not make the right play because it ended up burning him, and Verhaeghe went in for the game-winning goal. He's got to be a little bit better, and I could think we could all attest to the fact that him – and even Mark Giordano to an extent has to be a little bit better with their decision-making. And I think maybe age is catching up with Gio, but Brody, they expect a little bit more consistency from him. And with him and McCabe as a top pairing right now, he needs to be at his best and he can't be making those risky moves. Cause I don't want to say like kind of like a Justin Hall kind of thing because he's been more consistent, but He's just got to be a little bit better. I think from here on out, he just needs to do what he did successfully before. Just play it safe, play it simple, and then things will go right his way.
Alex, game two. Leafs need, in my opinion, you want to go back to Florida with a split. What do the Leafs need to do to get game two to go their way?
I think they just got all – this is going to sound like a typical guy on couch watching sports trying to coach his team take. But I think that they really just have to limit brain farts. Just stop – you know, like I really didn't hate their effort all that much in game one. I think it was more just the fact that they made stupid mistakes at bad times. And, you know, you can get away with doing that sometimes in the playoffs, but you don't want to rely on getting yourself out of that when the mistakes come back to bite you. So I think they just got to stick to their game. I think they just got to do exactly what they did in game two of last series. Like, hell, if you want to, you know, the Leafs obviously didn't get blown out in game one, but if you want to find a blueprint to follow, just do exactly what you did in round one. I think we need a big game from Samsonov. And I think they just got to respond. Don't try and change anything about your game aside from the brain farts, because I think for the most part, they were getting their looks and they were having their chances. And I think, you know, a couple more bounces go their way, they're fine. So I'd like to pretty much just see more of the same and definitely a little less of the brain farts. And I think they'll be fine.
Yeah, I think a quick start, that's the biggest thing. If you can get off to a quick start, you know, get a couple tucks early on and get your guys going, I think that fires your team up a lot quicker. I think Sammy seemed a little off in game one. I think if he has a bounce back game like he has all playoff long, all season long, really, you know, you're talking about a different outcome because you said it, Alex. Their effort in game one was not bad. It wasn't bad at all. We saw it like you both mentioned, the physical play was incredible. They're right there. They're containing the people they need to contain, and I think that's the biggest thing for them. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do. I do want to get your thoughts, though, quickly before we jump into our next topic here. Florida limiting – the Panthers limiting ticket sales to Canadian citizens. And the only reason I ask is because I've looked at like, Facebook groups with the Leafs, Leafs Facebook groups, fan groups, and you got Americans that are down there saying, like, you know, I'll buy your tickets. Just Venmo me the money. You know, you'll get down here. I actually know some people that got tickets that are going down. But on top of that, then you have like, you know, you have guys that are like willing to send, and the snowbirds, most of them have US credit cards as it is anyway. So they're going to be able to purchase tickets regardless. So I'm just curious, like, one, what the NHL's take must be on this, because it doesn't help with growing the game technically. Not that you need to grow the game surrounding the Maple Leafs, like, let's be honest. But at the same time, you know, you're trying to create a home atmosphere, but all you're doing is kind of like, I don't know. I think it's the stupidest thing in the world. I think it's the dumbest, most ridiculous bullshit. Like, Tampa, you tried to do it a couple years ago and it didn't fucking work out then. So what are the Florida Panthers, man? Like, the Florida Panthers are looking for fans 90% of the time. What are you doing limiting ticket sales?
Okay, and here's the funniest part about it. Do the Panthers really think that the people showing up in Leafs jerseys are all flying down from Ontario? No.
Nah.
You know how many retirees are in Florida and how many people are living
They're already there.
Who are there and they're originally from Canada, but they wanted to move somewhere warm. With the Panthers restricting ticket sales to Florida residents only, all they are doing with that is basically holding up a sign saying we're insecure as fuck. That's all they're doing.
Yeah.
Because they are not going to, I don't know what their expectation is here. Like, is their expectation that they're going to limit sales to only Florida residents and then it's just going to be a packed barn of nothing but Panthers jerseys? Just, you know, simply only your home fans, no like enemy territory or anything like that. Like, what are you doing?
I think you just gave me a great idea for some content later on. So
nice. Love it.
I think you gave me some great ideas for content. I agree with you.
I was about to say
the sign guy holding up a sign saying I'm insecure wearing a Panthers jersey. Like that's really what it comes down to. And that's not a knock on Panthers fans, because, you know, we joke about how the Panthers, you know, don't have a fan base and stuff like that. You know, there are fans down there. Every team's got their fans that show up and make
absolutely
show up and come to their games. But you're not going to do anything. You think you're going to do something, but you're not going to do anything. Even the Leaf players are calling bullshit on that.
Yeah.
Jake McCabe was like, yeah, I highly doubt that. And Bunting was like, oh, I'm sure they'll find their way into the stands. Like,
it's not going to work. Like, let's be realistic. They're resale sites that you could buy those. Obviously, they're going to be scalped, but at the same time, you can still rebuy them online. There isn't any doubt about that. And the fact that you're going to be losing money if you do that to an organization that's still kind of like lower in, you know, in terms of like a hockey related revenue coming in. Are you really going to like lose money over that just because you don't want Maple Leaf fans there?
I can't wait to see what the crowd looks like game 3.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
All blue, like, let's baby, face it. And Alex sitting there in tight blue in the corner.
Oh my God.
Hey, I don't know how much of a budget we have from these sponsorships, but if you guys want to fly me out to Florida for game 3, I will dye my skin blue and I'll be there.
Right there beside you. If there's somebody willing to pay our tickets down there, I'll be right there beside you.
Oh,
yeah.
Imagine our spending our Saturday like that, eh?
So are we really just going to dye ourselves blue like the Smurfs, or?
Yes,
absolutely. I'll even wear the white hat.
You know what?
You'll be Papa Smurf. How about that?
We'll turn ourselves into like a dollar store version of the Blue Man Group. Bring drums and we'll Peter, you're a drummer.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, we'll play, we'll get all these massive massive
get a drum line going.
Get all these massive timpanis and just start hitting. I don't know. Yeah, just start a drum line every time the Leafs score. Every time whistles. Come on.
We couldn't afford the body paint, so we just got pool dye.
Oh my God. That's going to end very well.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We're back at work a week later, still fully blue.
Jeez.
Oh God.
Forbes is like trying to like talk to his employees, just like, hey, take me seriously, damn it.
I wouldn't be able to take myself seriously. I'd wake up in the morning and just shake my head in the mirror. Anyway,
I already do that. So,
All right, boys. Last little point here before we get going. Alex, let's throw it to you. Containing Matthew Tkachuk, he's obviously playing his head games. He's, you know, mental warfare on the Maple Leafs in game one. And aside from containing him, what do the Leafs have to do to get this series to go their way?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you want to talk about containing Matt Tkachuk, I think the number one way to do that is keep the Gio Lilly or Gio Hall pairing off the ice when he's out there, because you need at least one of Jake McCabe or Luke Shen staple to him at all times. So that's going to be a way to contain Tkachuk. I think, like, just like I said about what they need to do in game two, I think they just need to stay true to their game and keep using that series against Tampa Bay as a reference point. Like, hey, this is not the team of 2022 or 2021 or 2020. This is a different team. This is one that has proven they can win and win these tight games. And, you know, Florida, and I'm not downplaying them at all, because we just talked about how much motivation they're going to have and how they could be one of the hungriest teams in the playoffs right now. But on paper, this is a team that barely squeaked into the playoffs. Like, if you are the Toronto Maple Leafs, you should be reminding yourself that you're better than them on paper if you show up and play your game. Because if you don't do that, you try to cheat the game, then Florida's going to win, because they've got momentum right now. Sure, the Leafs have momentum too, but they've got their own. And, you know, Matt Tkachuk, you even heard what he said in his press conference the morning of game one. He said, you know, I don't even remember what the quote was. It was an underdog quote. Something about how people said we weren't going to beat Boston. Now people are saying we won't beat Toronto or something like that. I don't know. I can't remember. Too fried. I got to go to bed. yeah, that's really what it comes down to for me. Just staying true to the game. This is a great Leafs team that's strong in every aspect. They're not really missing anything this year. It's just a matter of showing up and playing their game.
Peter, same question to you. What the Leafs need to do aside from containing Matthew Tkachuk to get this job done?
I mean, if he's going to play those mind games, play the mind games back. I mean, you saw him try to get inside Matthew Nyes's head, and then he just bounces back and scores that goal right away. I would suggest, you know, chipping a puck at him, but you probably can't do that in the playoffs because they'll probably score that right away. Yeah, I agree with Alex. I think you just got to, like, win the matchup against them. And you know what? Show that physicality, because we saw Shen lay that massive hit along the boards, and it's like, man, you throw him off his game, he's going to retaliate and probably do something stupid, and that's going to draw you a penalty. And the Maple Leafs have been successful against Tkachuk this season. In four games played, you want to know how many – I mean – like, four games is like a short amount of time, but in those four games, he only registered one goal. Maple Leafs know how to shut down Matthew Tkachuk. They know how to shut down the star players against the opposition. They did a fantastic job limiting the, you know, point totals for Kucherov, Stamkos, and Point in that series against the Lightning. They're a tougher task than anybody on the Florida Panthers right now. So if you're able to do that, you can easily do the same thing. And I would also suggest, kind of like the third pairing, don't put the fourth line against them. I mean, literally, I saw that fourth line shift, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, if you're Keith, listen, I know you got to, like, match the lines, and you got to play everybody at certain points, but do not play the fourth line against the top line. You're asking to be scored against. Just do that, and you know what? Again, watch the matchups and get inside his head, too. Because we have the players now. When we were talking on Maple Leaf Lounge, we heard Luke Shen call either Tanner Jeannot or Pat Maroon irrelevant. And you saw how mad the bench got at that. You do the same thing and chirp the Matthew Tkachuk. That's all you need to do.
Yeah, you've got guys that have been around, right? You know, they know how to play the games. Luke Shen's been there for two cups. He's, you know, he knows what needs to get done. And I think playing the game is exactly what you need to do. You need to find a way to get him away from what he does to be successful. And if chirping you is part of his game that makes him successful, you got to find a way to get him off of that. And I think that's the key to containing a guy like Matt Tkachuk. But, you know, to get this done, I think it's you know, clamping down defensively, making sure that you get that early start every game, play your 60 minutes and clamp down defensively, because this Florida Panthers team is going to come at you hard. Verhage might be one of the more underrated players in the league over the last two seasons. Again, another guy that the Leafs had within their organization at one point and let him go. And you know, happy for him that he's having success, but I don't want to see it come against the Maple Leafs. So, but at the same time, you know, Bobrovsky's been shaky at times this year. So, you know, he's not the same Bobrovsky that you're going to see night in and night out that you saw in game one. On top of that, their backup is Alex Lyon. I mean, not the biggest NHL resume. So get him into the game if you have to. Find a way to chase Bob off his game. And I think, you know, you're talking about a different Florida Panthers team. But it's going to be a long, hard series. I think this series goes at least six, if not seven. And I think the Leafs are going to find a way to make it tough on them. I think it's going to be a physical one. I think they're going to be a lot of battered and bruised players coming out of this series, but it's going to be a fun one to watch, boys, and that's what we want in round two. It's not your regular round two if you look around the league right now, but it's exactly what the NHL needs right now with Seattle playing the way they're playing, obviously Edmonton playing the way they're playing. We're going to see that tonight. Carolina, New Jersey having a good one this evening as well. So lots to talk about when it comes to the league wide, as well as our Leafs going into the next week here. The Leafs are back in action tomorrow night for game two. That's Thursday night. Before we close it out here, gentlemen, anything you wanted to add before game two kicks off tomorrow?
I got nothing to add. Go watch my video if you haven't yet.
Peter, anything from you, buddy?
Go get it.
Go get it. Anyways, boys, thanks again, as always, for joining us for episode 123 of the podcast. I will say now we do have some big news coming out this week, so we're very excited to announce that as well. Shout out to the Indy Ale House for consistently sponsoring us and partnering with us throughout this season. We hope to have them back next year as well. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel at Sticks in the Six, 6IX, as well as hit us up on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, wherever you look at content for podcasts like ours. Otherwise, you can check out every streaming service over the next couple of days. And this episode 123 will be up on all streaming services.
It'll be up on every service out there.
It'll be up on every service. Otherwise,
you floors, can tables, you name it.
Yeah.
Floors, tables. Yeah, Jesus.
Watch it on the grass if you want.
Oh geez, it'll be a banner on the boards in Florida as they go into game three. Anyways, gentlemen, you can follow us all on Twitter as well at Andrew G Forbes for myself, A Hobson Media for Alex, and at P Barrichini for Peter. Aside from that, we look forward to hearing your thoughts after game two tomorrow night, and we'll check back with you for episode 124 of the podcast next week.